20. Night walk. After one day of steaming over it, I'd had enough. I don't know when I made the decision, or whether it even was a decision, rather than a kind of sleepwalking. It was sometime before 3 in the morning. I was still feeling so angry and embarrassed I couldn't get to sleep. So I got up and started down the corridor to the mess hall. Nibble on something. But I walked on past. It looked like no one else was up. Just dim safety lights. I wound up in the dressing room and realized what I was doing. The airlock had a warning override button that you could press so the buzzer wouldn't go on and on if you had to keep the inner door open. Card had shown me how you could keep the button stuck down with the point of a pencil or a pen. With the airlock buzzer disabled, a person could actually go outside alone, undetected. Card had done it with Barry for a few minutes early one morning, just to prove it could be done. So I could just be by myself for an hour or two, then sneak back in. And did I ever want to be by myself? I went through the dress-up procedure as quietly as possible. Then, before I took a step toward the airlock, I visualized myself doing a safety check on another person and did it methodically on myself. It would be so pathetic to die out there, breaking the rules. I went up the stairs silently as a thief. Well, I was a thief. What could they do, deport me? For safety's sake, I had decided to take a dog, even though it would slow me down a bit. I actually hesitated and tested carrying 2 oxygen bottles by themselves, but that was awkward. Better safe than sorry, I said to myself in mother's voice, and ground my teeth while saying it. But going out without a dog and dying would be pathetic. Arch criminals are evil, not pathetic. I clicked the override button down and jammed it with the point of a pen stick. The evacuating pump sounded loud, though I knew you could hardly hear it in the changing room. It rattled off into silence. Then the red light glowed green, and the door swung open into darkness. I stepped out, pulling the dog, and the door slid shut behind it. I decided not to turn on the suit light, and stood there for several minutes while my eyes adjusted. Walking at night just by starlight, you couldn't do that any other place I've lived. It wouldn't be dangerous if I was careful. Besides, if I turned on a light, someone could see me from the mess hall window. The nearby rocks gave me my bearings, and I started out toward Telegraph Hill. On the other side of the hill, I'd be invisible from the base, and vice versa, alone for the first time in almost a year. Earth year. Seeing the familiar rock field in this ghostly half-light brought back some of the mystery and excitement of the first couple of days. The landing, and my first excursion with Paul. If he knew I was doing this, well, he might approve secretly. He wasn't much of a rule guy, except for safety. Thinking that, my foot turned on a small rock, and I staggered, getting my balance back. Keep your eyes on the ground while you're walking. It would be, what is the word I'm looking for here, pathetic? To trip and break your helmet out here. It took me less than a half hour to get to the base of Telegraph Hill. It wasn't all that steep, but the dog's traction wasn't really up to it. A truly adventurous person would leave the dog behind and climb to the top with her suit air alone. And although I do like adventure, I'm also afflicted with patheticophobia. The dog and I could go around the mountain rather than over it. I decided to walk in a straight line for 1 hour, see how far I could get, and walk back, following the dog's track in the dust. That was my big mistake. One of them, anyhow. If I'd just gone to the top, taken a picture, and headed straight back, I might have gotten away with the whole thing. I wasn't totally stupid. I didn't go into the hill's radio shadow. And I cranked the dog's radio antenna up all the way, Since I was headed for the horizon and knew that any small depression in the ground could hide me from the colony's radio transceiver. The wind picked up a little. I couldn't feel or hear it, of course, but the sky showed it. Jupiter was just rising, and its bright, pale yellow light had a halo and was slightly dimmed by the dust in the air. I remembered Dad pointing out Jupiter and then Mars, the morning we left Florida, and had a delicious shiver at the thought that I was standing on that little point of light now. The area immediately around the colony was as well explored as any place on Mars, but I knew from rock hounding with Paul that you could find new stuff just a couple hundred meters from the airlock door. I went 4 or 5 kilometers and found something really new. I had been going for 57 minutes, about to turn back, and was looking for a soft rock that I could mark with an X or something. Maybe scratch, "Surrender, puny earthlings," on it, though I suspected people would figure out who had done it. There was no noise, just a suddenly weightless feeling, and I was falling through a hole in the ground. I'd broken through something like a thin sheet of ice, but there was nothing underneath it. I was able to turn on the suit light as I tumbled down, but all I saw was a glimpse of the dog spinning around beside and then above me. It seemed like a long time, but I guess I didn't fall for more than a few seconds. I hit hard on my left foot and heard the sickening sound of a bone cracking just an instant before the pain hit me. I lay still, bright red sparks fading from my vision while the pain amped up and up, trying to think, not scream. It was dark again. My ankle was probably broken, and at least one rib on the left side. I breathed deeply, listening. Paul told me about how he had broken a rib in a car wreck, and he could tell by the sound that it had punctured his lung. This did hurt, but didn't sound different. And then I realized I was lucky to be breathing at all. The helmet and suit were intact. But would I be able to keep breathing long enough to be rescued? I clicked the suit light switch over and over, and nothing happened. If I could find the dog, and if it was intact, I'd have an extra 16 hours of oxygen. Otherwise, I probably had 2.5 hours. I didn't suppose the radio would do any good underground, but I tried it anyway. Yelled into it for a minute, and then listened. Nothing. These suits ought to have some sort of beeper to trace people with. But then I guess nobody was supposed to wander off and disappear. It was about 4. How long before someone woke up and noticed I was gone? How long before someone got worried enough to check and see that the suit and dog were missing? I tried to stand, and it wasn't possible. The pain was intolerable, and the bone made an ominous sound. I couldn't help crying, but stopped after a minute. Pathetic. Had to find the dog, with its oxygen and power. I stretched out and patted the ground back and forth, and scrambled around in a circle, feeling for it. It wasn't anywhere nearby. But how far could it have rolled after it hit? I had to be careful, not just crawl off in some random direction and get lost. I remembered feeling a large, kind of pointy rock off to my left. Good thing I hadn't landed on it, and could use it as a reference point. I found it and moved up so my foot was touching it. Visualizing an old-fashioned clock with me as the hour hand, I went off in the 12 o'clock direction, measuring 4 body lengths, inchworm style. Then, crawled back to the pointy rock and did the same thing in the opposite, 6 o'clock direction. Nothing there, nor at 9 o'clock or 3 o'clock, and I tried not to panic. In my mind's eye, I could see the areas where I hadn't been able to reach. The angles midway between 12 o'clock and 3 o'clock, 3 o'clock and 6 o'clock, and so on. I went back to the pointy rock and started over. On the second try, my hand touched one of the dog's wheels, and I smiled in spite of my situation. It was lying on its side. I uprighted it and felt for the switch that would turn on its light. When it came on it, I was looking straight into it, and it dazzled me blind. Facing away from it, after a couple of minutes, I could see some of where I was. I'd fallen into a large underground cavern, maybe shaped like a dome, though I couldn't see as far as the top. I guessed it was part of a lava tube that was almost open to the surface, worn so thin that it couldn't support my weight. Maybe it joined up with the lava tube that we lived in. But even if it did, and even if I knew which direction to go, I couldn't crawl the 4 kilometers back. I tried to ignore the pain and do the math anyhow. 16 hours of oxygen, 4 kilometers, that means creeping 250 meters per hour, dragging the dog along behind me. No way. Better to hope they would track me down here. What were the chances of that? Maybe the dog's tracks, or my boot prints? Only in dusty places if the wind didn't cover them up before dawn. If they searched at night, the dog's light might help. How close would a person have to come to the hole to see it? Close enough to crash through and join me? And would the dog's power supply last long enough to shine all night and again tomorrow night? It wouldn't have to last any longer than that. The ankle was hurting less, but that was because of numbness. My hands and feet were getting cold. Was that a suit malfunction, or just because I was stretched out on this cold cave floor, where the sun had never shined? With a start, I realized the coldness could mean that my suit was losing power. It should automatically warm up the gloves and boots. I opened my mouth wide and with my chin pressed the switch that ought to project a technical readout in front of my eyes with power remaining, and nothing came up. Well, the dog obviously had power to spare. I unreeled the recharge cable and plugged its jack into my LSU. Nothing happened. I chinned the switch over and over. Nothing. Maybe it was just the readout display that was broken. I was getting power, but it wasn't registering. Trying not to panic, I wiggled the jack, unplugged, and replugged it. Still nothing. I was breathing, though. That part worked. I unrolled the umbilical hose from the dog and pushed the fitting into the bottom of the LSU. It made a loud pop, and a sudden breeze of cold oxygen blew around my neck and chin. So at least I wouldn't die of that. I would be frozen solid before I ran out of air. How comforting. Acid rush of pain in my throat. I choked it back and sucked on the water tube until the nausea was gone. Which made me think about the other end, and I clamped up. I was not going to fill the suit's emergency diaper with shit and piss before I died. Though the people who deal with dead people probably have seen that before. And it would be frozen solid, so what's the difference? Inside the body or outside? I stopped crying long enough to turn on the radio and say goodbye to people and apologize for my stupidity. Though it's unlikely that anyone would ever hear it. Unless there was some kind of secret recorder in the suit, and someone stumbled on it years from now. If the dragon had anything to say about it, there would be. I wished I had Dad Zen. If Dad were in this situation, he would just accept it and wait to leave his body. I tipped the dog up on end so its light shone directly up toward the hole I'd fallen through, still too high up to see. I couldn't feel my feet or hands anymore and was growing heavy-lidded. I'd read that freezing to death was the least painful way to go, and one of my last coherent thoughts was, who came back to tell them? Then I hallucinated an angel, wearing red, surrounded by an ethereal bubble. He was incredibly ugly.